The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but
we
because
have
they
main
are
engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Morning Space Show program live. It's great to be back live, given my recent short trip to Southern California. Great to be here. A couple of things. It's raining in the San Francisco Bay Area, which, of course, we certainly need. But if you hear some crackling on the phone lines, that is due to the rain because we're working off of traditional Plano telephone lines, otherwise known as POTS. And rain sometimes gives us static. So right now we're good, but you never know where that's going to take us. Also, my congratulations to the San Francisco Giants for their really suspenseful and fabulous World Series win. They have a parade in downtown San Francisco today, starting at noon, a ticker tape parade. It's going to be interesting to see how they do that if the rain continues. I can't imagine ticker tape in the rain. I will not be in attendance, but it is being telecast on the San Francisco Giants website for anyone out there interested, sfgiants.com. And Kansas City was a great team. I know we don't do sports on this show, but boy, they were a really good baseball team. I thought they were going to pull it out in the ninth inning, but they wasn't to be. Anyway, great to be here. And one other quick announcement. We're doing open lines on Sunday. This is going to be November 2nd. And it'll be 12 to 2 p.m. California time. Remember, daylight savings time ends, so I believe you turn your clocks back and you sacrifice an hour of sleep. So that'll be 12 p.m. Sunday, open lines. All first-time callers more than welcome and encouraged to call us. And remember, also STEM and space topics, please. Today, if you want to give us a call to our guest, the toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. No call screener. Let the phone ring until it's answered, and then we'll bring you up on air. For those of you who listen at work and cannot pick up the phone and call us, but you can send us an email comment or question, because we know this is work hours. The email to use today is drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. Also, do remember that we are a trademarked and copyrighted program. We do permit everybody to download our shows, share them, and pass them around on the Internet. No problem in doing that. If you know people that you think should be interested or might get interested in space or the topics that we discuss, by all means, either send the URL or send them the program, and you're certainly free to do that. The only restrictions are not to do anything commercial with the programs. Please don't edit them, even if it's for your own personal use. And we don't do written transcripts, even if those written transcripts are for your own personal use. And we thank you for following those simple, short rules. We do podcast. We thank Andrew at gigadial.net. For our podcasting service, the RSS URL to subscribe to our podcast is on our website, both of our newsletters, the short form and the long form on the website. And if you have any questions about our podcast, please don't hesitate to get a hold of me. You can get our podcast off of iTunes, Microsoft Zune, and a host of other places on the net as well. Go to our website, thespaceshow.com. We have a detailed newsletter that is published Sunday after the Sunday Space Show program. It has all of the guest bios for the coming week. It has details about the upcoming programs in the coming week. And it's the only place where we have a future events section for the Space Show, what's on board for the next couple of weeks probably the next couple of months. So do check that out. And then if we have to cancel a program or change it or modify it for one reason or another, and this does happen, we do this first on the website newsletter. For example, this week I modified it twice, both for the show today as well as for the Open Lines program on Sunday. So always to stay current, check the website newsletter, because it is usually more current if changes are going on than the email newsletter. Everything we do is archived, and you can listen right off of our website, or you can easily download the shows. The same for our blog, http://thespaceshow.wordpress.com. We have a store on our website, and you'll see it up in the left-hand corner. It's called Space Show Gear. To me, the most important button on the website is Support the Space Show. Remember, we're a nonprofit 501c3 with onegiantleapfoundation.org. And we appreciate your support, because that is what keeps the Space Show going. So for those of you who do contribute to One Giant Leap in the Space Show, remember that you do get a tax deduction off of your federal taxes, as we are a 501c3 nonprofit. The same is true for those of you paying California taxes, as we are a public benefit corporation. And again, without your support, there would simply be no Space Show. I'd hang it up. So your support is crucial for us, and we thank you very much for that support. There is also a guest search tool in the middle of our website. You'll see it near the social media buttons. This lists all of our programs chronologically. The newest are on top. And most of the programs have keywords, so you can see who the guest was, and you can see what the show is about. So here you can do global searches for your favorite guest or your favorite space subject, like Mars tourism or, you know, who knows what, okay? Anti-gravity, microgravity, artificial gravity. And then you'll get all of the shows where that has been discussed. And you can jot down the dates and then go back to our Space Show homepage, and our search engine at the bottom of the homepage works via the date. So you want to look at the date, put in the date, and then you can pull up all of those shows. Or you can check to see if a certain guest has ever been on the Space Show, and then if not, you can recommend that we have that guest as a guest on the Space Show. One other thing, please do remember that we are partially sponsored by the Secure World Foundation. Secure World Foundation promotes cooperative solutions for space security. For more information about Secure World, visit their own website, which is www.swfound.org. And if you go to their website, remember that they have a lot of white papers and really analysis statements and other things showing what they do, and conferences and summaries of those conferences. So you'll get quite a bit of really relevant information. So I do recommend you visit swfound.org. They also sponsor our webinar series. Speaking of webinars, we have one for Sunday, November 16th. And this is the Great SLS Debate. So Rick Boozer is on the I Hate SLS side. And none other than SLS John, our frequent caller who absolutely has a love fest with SLS, John Hunt, will be the side sticking up for SLS. And this is going to be a webinar November 16th. It has a special time for it in the afternoon. And it's already listed on the coming events on the website newsletter, but I'm going to start promoting it now because we are just a couple of weeks out from this webinar. So it should be a lot of fun and hopefully informative as well. And again, remember that if you are unable to use the toll-free number today, 1-866-687-7223, your emails are welcome. So I'm happy to bring to the Space Show my friend Amnon Govrin. Did I get that right?
Yeah, close enough.
Okay, close enough. I'll give you his bio in a minute, but he has his own blog, and he wrote a recent article, October 18th, that I think is worth discussing on the Space Show, and he'll describe it and tell you about it. But the article is titled, Is Microsoft the NASA a Software Company? And Amnon is in the software industry. He's a veteran as well as a space enthusiast. He has his Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from the Technion University, which is located in Haifa, Israel. He's married. He has three kids, three sons. He grew up in Israel, and he's lived in the United States since 2002. He currently works at Microsoft as a senior program manager on OneDrive after working for the Israeli military as a terminal ballistics experimentation engineer and holding several software industry jobs at the Mercury Interactive Webroot software as well as in Amazon. He is co-founder of Astronauts for Hire, and his blog is called Space Pirations, SpacePiratiOns, and the URL is www.spacepirations.com, and this is about space topics from his own personal perspective. He also has gone through the NASTAR Suborbital Scientist Training Program and the Sirius Situational Awareness Training Program. And if you go to spacepirations.com, you can find his article from October 18th, Is Microsoft the NASA of Software Companies? Good morning. Welcome to the Space Show. How are you, Amnon?
Fine, thanks. First, I'd like to thank you for having me on the show. It's an honor after listening for years and getting so much information and opinions from your show.
Thank you very much. So let's end our love fest and get down to business, okay? Why write an article, Is Microsoft the NASA of Software Companies? What's this about, and how do you think of Microsoft being the NASA for software companies? Give us some background here.
So I joined Microsoft a little over 2 years ago. And before joining Microsoft, I had an impression of Microsoft from the outside, just like I have an impression of NASA from the outside. When I joined, I found several things to be different than my impression on the outside. And after being there for about a year, I started thinking, well, am I seeing similar patterns in Microsoft that I can see at least as an external person in NASA? Are they suffering from the same problems? Are they doing great things from the same perspective, in the same manner? And I started kind of rolling this idea and thinking about it. And it wasn't until after over a year later that I started kind of putting my thoughts in writing and understanding that there are some similarities. But the end conclusion is somewhat of a no. And I'll go through the kind of the thought process that at least got me to that conclusion.
So what did you say in your article? Let's talk specifics about your article, which I urge everybody to read, and I will put the direct URL in the archive summary so all of you can find it. What do you say? You start out and you say both Microsoft and NASA have done great things and have arguably contributed to the U.S. and world in significant ways, but then both are criticized for undelivered projects or having too much inertia, reflecting sort of the good old days, some of the typical criticisms that get levied at both of them. So give us an idea of how you evaluated this situation and came up with your ideas on it.
All right. So like you read from the beginning, the kind of the basic premise of the article, both Microsoft and NASA are these big entities that were uniquely positioned, both time-wise and in their own market, if you will. And they did great things that nobody did before, if it were put a computer on every desk for Microsoft and putting people on the moon, arguably much more inspirational, but great things nonetheless. And then if you really look carefully, it is very interesting to note how the criticism about Microsoft and about NASA is very similar, and you see things that are that seem like parallels between the two entities. For example, projects that don't get to fruition. For example, being structured in a rigid structure that was great for Apollo or maybe great for the good old days of Windows and Office, and maybe are not positioned to deliver what they need to deliver in the upcoming decade or more. So I go through a kind of a set of criteria, if you will, or domains where things seem to be very parallel, very similar between the two, and I kind of go from there. So the first thing that I look at is their beginning. If you look at NASA, essentially it was an underdog in the early days of the space age. Right? It was formed after the big, you can call it the Big Bang of Sputnik in 1957, and then even after it was formed, the Russians, the USSR at the time, continued to lead in space and doing many, many firsts, from the first man in space, also doing the first orbit in space, the first man-made objects to soft land on the moon and take photos, the first woman in space. Now, that didn't continue to this day, right, or especially all the way through the first chapter of the space age that ended with Apollo 11 and the United States winning on the front of landing the first humans on the moon and retrieving them safely. But the beginning was fairly modest. If you look on the Microsoft side, it was also, it had modest beginnings. It was initially a small software company, and throughout its existence, it had to claw its way through markets where it wasn't the obvious leader in the beginning. If we're talking about Office, for example, if you remember, there was WordPerfect, there was Lotus 1-2-3, Quattro Pro, Eudora on the email front. There were many places where Microsoft's initial offerings were not on par, and they were not the leaders in those domains. Another obvious one is gaming, where if you think about it, Nintendo is really the company that existed from the early days of gaming all the way to today and has been continuously fairly successful. Sony also started much earlier than Microsoft. I pulled some release dates. The Nintendo Entertainment System, the first Nintendo console gaming system, was released in 83. PlayStation from Sony was released in 94, and the first Xbox was released in 2001. So obviously Microsoft had a lot of catching up to do in various places, and it managed to do this successfully. So that's on the beginning side of things. It's important to remember that neither Microsoft nor NASA started in their current state. They didn't start as these huge entities, as market leaders. They didn't start with the structure that they're in right now. They evolved into that. So that's why I thought it was important to look at the beginning of both Microsoft and NASA in that one.
What is the relevance, if any, in your analysis of the fact that NASA was government-funded and Microsoft was private-funded?
So that comes into play later on. It comes into play, I think, in defected, where they diverge from each other, and the way that Microsoft is currently renewing itself versus NASA, that, again, at least on the outside, doesn't seem like that's happening, although, you know, we could see that happening later on. I think that from the environment or from the various traits that are parallel, less relevant. There are different reasons for the different comparable traits of both entities. But the kind of the bottom line is that they are similar in those traits. So an example for that is politics, where you could look at it as if, well, Microsoft is a private, is a public company. It should be free of politics. It should be only answering to its shareholders, whereas NASA is obviously
political
entity that is based on a government decision, and every decision, everything that happens at NASA really is ties back to those government decisions and congressional districts. But at the same time, there is a parallel even there, because as such a big entity, Microsoft is not really immune from politics. Especially years ago, when it was the dominant market shareholder for operating systems, it was the target of a lot of politicians and lawsuits, forcing Microsoft to embark on big projects. For example, releasing Windows without a media player for Europe. Those were, by, you know, par excellence, political reasons for not allowing Microsoft to just do what it does for the sake of the shareholders, but being influenced by political environment. A smaller example is even where I work at OneDrive, which up until about a year ago was called SiteDrive, but it had to be renamed because the TV provider in the UK called Sky essentially owns the word Sky. And if Microsoft were a smaller entity, arguably that would be an issue that Microsoft had to handle. So the political environment is definitely a separator between the two, however, not as black and white as you might think.
Okay.
Now,
go ahead.
So the next thing that I looked at was, what separates Microsoft and NASA from many, many other companies or entities that obviously exist? And the best way I could describe it was to think about it as amazing things that no one else does. So if you look at the space industry, obviously there are companies that make great and amazing things. If we're talking about new space, as it's called, we have SpaceX, we have Virgin, we have a lot of companies that do things that others can't do at this point. But if you look at the earlier days, that's why I wrote, like, historically, NASA and Microsoft were the dominant players by far in their respective domains. So if we look at NASA, it's pretty obvious. NASA put people on the moon in 1969. NASA did the biggest rockets that were ever built, the most innovative and complex machine ever created by humans, which is the space shuttle. And they also most recently put an SUV on Mars, right? That is doing great scientific work. The list obviously goes on. I did not go and dig up everything that NASA did. But the end result is it all contributed to earthbound advancements in electronics, medical treatment, and other domains, and also to understand Earth and research the universe. So very big things, very kind of universal things that are unique if you compare it to a lot of what other companies do, which are still very interesting things, but not kind of world encompassing like that. On the Microsoft side, it's obviously less inspirational, less, let's say, grandiose as space. But if you look at Microsoft on the pragmatic side, on the practical side, Microsoft created Windows and Office, which, while, again, they're not as inspirational as landing people on the moon, but they essentially formed the basis for numerous other innovations and technology advancements. Right? Every or most presentations today are written on PowerPoint, right? And those presentations are sometimes described rockets, like you like to call them PowerPoint rockets. But joking aside, many things that innovate use Microsoft tools that facilitate this innovation, whether it's software, whether it's completely other domains through Office. And another common trait between two is that they both have pure research in them. So Microsoft has, maybe that would surprise some listeners, but Microsoft has a big research part to it that is not working on specific products that are going to see the light of day tomorrow or a year from now or 2 years from now, but they are working on technologies that will find their way into products and will make stuff that is maybe today's science fiction to become science fact. And that's kind of an important aspect of the parallel between the two, that it doesn't only go through and build the next thing that is required, that is known to be needed by customers and so on. There is an aspect of research for the sake of research, with the understanding that that research should be practical enough to create something that would find its way into people's hands in the future. So that's on the amazing thing no one else does from. Okay. Sorry, did you have a question?
Yeah, Catherine from Los Angeles has a question. And Catherine says, Amnon, have you attempted to evaluate the role Microsoft has played in supporting NASA through its operating systems and software?
That's an excellent question. That's a very interesting question. I have not. I've not looked at that symbiotic relationship, if you will. That's a great question, to essentially understand whether NASA uses PowerPoint for presentations and Word for documents and Windows as the operating system. That's a great question. I don't know.
What do you think? Is there any way you can take a guess at that kind of impact? I know you've been at a lot of NASA centers too, so a lot of their software and stuff for missions and analysis is their own or they've written their own and all that. But I've also, for example, been in the space shuttle control room and some other control rooms, and they're running a lot of computers. I mean, I haven't, it's been years, but they were running XP Pro and Microsoft products on their computers. So they clearly are using Microsoft and probably using Microsoft for all their office stuff, but they do have their, you know, some technical and proprietary programming for some of the other kinds of work that they use. But where would they be without the support of Microsoft, or would another company have stepped up with comparable products? And so you might be using ABC's operating system because Microsoft wasn't invented. I mean, I know it's really hard to extrapolate where you would be if Microsoft wasn't the one who, you know, has a lock on operating systems and stuff like that.
Yes, and even today, obviously, there are other operating systems like Linux and several variants of Linux that could be used, and I'm sure that NASA picks the best one for each use and each application. One interesting project that is a collaboration between Microsoft and NASA that is worth mentioning is the World Wide Telescope. So that's a Microsoft, I hope that I'm looking at the right one. That's a Microsoft essentially a piece of software that lets you travel among the stars and look at a lot of photographs done by NASA in context. So that's worth mentioning, and that has a lot of information from NASA, and I don't have internal information to the group that is doing the project, but I'm sure there is a dialogue there, and there is a back and forth and collaboration between Microsoft and NASA on that.
Do you think that there's any awareness of the similar, aside from your article, of the relationships or similarities with NASA and Microsoft? Do you think anyone in the respective organizations realizes there's kind of some similarities and a relationship here?
I don't know. I don't think so. I haven't seen any of that at Microsoft. My kind of initial click in my mind was formed mostly because of the way they're both are seen as these heavyweight entities that are built for the past instead of being built for the future, but each on their own merit. If you, the same kind of love-hate relationship with SLS, for example, that we see on your show and in a bunch of publications online, exists, for example, with Microsoft, and the love-hate relationship with Windows versus the Macintosh OS or versus Linux, and the same almost religious wars, especially in comments online between people, exist on Windows like they exist on NASA and SLS. So since I've been kind of exposed to both of these, it prompted my imagination and my kind of thinking that, hey, why is that? Why are they such a source for such polarized opinions? So I don't think that this kind of awareness exists very much, but maybe with other people that are both in the software industry or at Microsoft and are space enthusiasts, maybe that opinion has formed. But I haven't seen it in the past.
do you see? Well, first of all, did anyone at Microsoft see your article? Did you tell them you wrote it?
Yes, I told them I wrote it, but it right now pretty fresh. I haven't gotten a lot of responses. One interesting piece to note as well is that that Microsoft in its renewal, and we'll get to that a little later, is also going through waves of layoffs right now. So I heard yesterday that the third layoff wave started, and the importance of it in this discussion is that Microsoft is doing and is making those hard decisions that, again, arguably are tough and, you know, unfair and unjustified, and you lay off the individual contributors, and all of that discussion is okay to have. But the significance here is that I'm actually a part of the second wave to be laid off. I have been rehired since then because there were other positions that were open that were relevant for me, and I interviewed and got rehired. But if you look at the way NASA restructuring is at least being talked about, and the layoffs that happened, they get a lot more backlash, and you couldn't imagine NASA laying off, I think it was 15% of its workforce in a matter of several months, and not, being criticized a lot for it and not going well, let alone restructuring complete teams and other things that are happening at Microsoft, regardless of that.
Of course, they did lay off a ton of people after Shuttle retired, a lot of contractors, and there was a lot of criticism for it, but they did it anyway, and it really hurt the Florida and other pockets of the economy where the affected NASA people were. But they took huge hits on personnel.
Were those government employees, or were those only contractors?
As I understand it, the bulk of it was contractors, but there were also government employees, and a lot of government employees were told to take early retirement, which many of them did. So it was a mixture of both. But the standing army that serviced the shuttle, that of course was completely done, and also the launches, you know, with the external tanks and everything.
Right.
But a lot of that was contractors, but it was also NASA personnel as well. And as I said, a lot of the NASA personnel took early retirement. There wasn't much shifting of NASA personnel to other NASA positions because there wasn't a lot going on at NASA, but there was some of that. But I don't have the stats in front of me. We used to do a lot of shows about it when it was happening, and it mostly was contractors, you know, that took the brunt of all of those hits. But NASA also took some of those hits as well.
I think one of the differences here with NASA is that some of the reasons for the way it's structured with the centers is to provide work in as many congressional districts as possible. And one of the problems that creates, that adds overhead to relationships between teams, for example. Whereas at Microsoft right now, there is a big restructuring on the team level that is taking with it also restructuring in terms of where the teams are placed. And you can look at it before that restructuring, you could look at Redmond and Bellevue, which are both on the east side here in Seattle, as kind of a micro version of the way NASA centers are built. And I'll explain. So Microsoft is not co-located in a single place. It obviously has offices all over the world, but the bulk of employees, about 50,000, I think, give or take, maybe 45, are on a, let's say, roughly 10-mile radius, right, in the Redmond and Bellevue areas in Washington. But still, if there is a project that requires work from two teams that are in two different parts of that arrangement, which is in several campuses. Microsoft doesn't have one big campus at Redmond. It has several campuses that are, let's say, 5 to 10 minutes by car between them. And if you, even when you have projects like the one that I'm a part of, OneDrive, that requires a lot of collaboration between, let's say, OneDrive and Office, there were a lot of these trips and a lot of these 5, 10 minutes, 15 minutes periods of time that are wasted throughout the day between several people that want to get to different want to get to meetings between those two groups. So if you look at it and enlarge it by several orders of magnitude, you end up with the NASA sender, right, and collaboration between those that is much more difficult, and obviously getting people from one center to another requires usually a flight rather than a 10-minute drive. But since it's an overhead, even on the smaller scale of Microsoft, I'm sure that's an overhead on the bigger scale as well. Now, Microsoft can make a big change where it says, okay, we're structuring teams. Now, this team is moving from building 88 to building 34, and people obviously don't have to take their families from the state that they live in and move to another state in order to do that. They remain in the same spot, so it's more flexible to do that. It's not bound by the same constraints. And on top of that, you add the political aspect of, let's say that there is a plan tomorrow to consolidate two of the NASA centers. And it means that essentially you're going to tell people you can continue to work, but it means that you have to move to a different state, which is difficult with families and other reasons. Even if that is fine with the people that move, that need to move, it's probably not going to be fine with the Congress and congressional districts and losing all these jobs on that congressional district and losing kind of adjustment or related jobs like services. And it's going to be much more difficult to push something like that compared to Microsoft. However, at the same time, when I joined Microsoft and throughout at least the first year at Microsoft, it seems to suffer from that as well. I did find myself constantly going to different buildings and wasting out of a day, maybe 25 or at worst 50% just for that travel to meeting. And that is changing now.
You have a section in your paper called Black Sheep, which is really about canceled or failed products. And You list several by Microsoft, and then, of course, NASA is known for canceled projects, especially with Congress. So on the one hand, a black sheep for Microsoft is because of a commercial lack of success in the product. Vista is something you cited as an example. A black sheep for NASA may be that, for whatever reason, Congress has decided to shut off the funding for it. So, for example, Constellation, Ares 1, Ares 5, when the new administration came in, they decided to shut that down because that was no longer on the political agenda. So it's not necessarily about a failed project, correct? So there's a difference there, isn't there?
Yes, definitely. Black Sheep, I titled that as the project that really didn't come to fruition, and that can be interpreted in more than one way. On the Vista side, there are projects within Windows Vista that actually didn't see the light of day, that weren't released. So several aspects of Windows Vista were supposed to be very different than what they ended up being. For example, the file system. There was a whole new file system called WinFS that actually was worked on for several years and eventually did not get released. So in that aspect, Microsoft does have these projects that don't end up even being released. But you are correct that there are different reasons for these black sheep or unsuccessful projects. And for Microsoft, there is that aspect of projects that get released and are just not successful and need to be followed up with projects that are more successful. For example, Windows 7 was far, far more successful than Windows Vista.
Yeah, I use Windows 7, but I didn't want to give up XP Pro, but we were forced to do that, so.
Yeah, it's no longer supported after, 13 years now.
Yeah, well,
of being released.
It still is a great program, but you have a caller on hold. You ready for it?
Sure.
Hi, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you? Where are you?
Good afternoon, David. It's Michael Listener over in New Hampshire.
Boy, your election is in the news a lot these days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting on Tuesday.
Are you want to make predictions, make a bet? I've been betting people and I win, but nobody pays off on the bets to me.
Nope, it's too much of a toss. Although I was pretty encouraged because the GOP has a ground game here in New Hampshire, which I thought was very interesting.
Well, that's pretty amazing. I'm surprised they have anything. So.
Yeah, they have a ground game, so I was pretty interested to see that. So that's always a good sign for their party.
Competition between two sets of boobs, so take your pick. Anyway, that's not why you called.
So. No, it's not why I called. Like, we can talk about that any other time. No, I just want to interesting. You know, I got into this discussion a little bit late. I forgot about the show today, but I talking about how NASA is decentralized, how Microsoft kind of decentralized some of its operations. In particular with NASA, one thing people always harp on said, well, this is for, and it was mentioned by your guest, is that it is to, to support congressional districts. And that is true, but at the same time, I found that when you really want to get people innovative and thinking in all the into different types of directions, it's good to decentralize them too. That way, they're not really dragged into a group mindset and, going the flow of one river. If you have groups decentralized, they may attack a problem at a different angle and come up with different solutions or even new different problems to be solved and look at things from a different way. I mean, it's just like me, a lot of my practice deals with, my law practice deals with working with attorneys, and attorneys will say, here, will you look at this for me, will you look at this case for me and tell me what you think? And by decentralizing what they're looking at and giving it to me, I look at it and say, I can look at it a whole new way and say, look, did you see this down here? And they said, you know what, I never would have solved that. The idea being is we get so invested in our ideas that we don't want to give them up. Decentralizing the minds all the brain power kind of gives you an opportunity to get different areas. Of course, you know, there are projects where you got to bring the brain trust together to, you know, to really focus it. But having it decentralized is good, and I think that works for NASA. Even though people lament the fact that, well, it's, you know, there's a lot of overhead. Yeah, it's expensive, and I think the same thing with Microsoft. Your guest has been saying, you know, I'm kind of getting the impression that, you know, that was kind of Microsoft's underlying idea, was to get different groups of people thinking in different directions, and that's where really innovation is sparked.
Amnon, any comments?
Yeah, so those are fair points. Hi, Michael. I enjoy listening to the shows that you're on. I think the difference is that you can look at decentralizing on a geolocation perspective or term, and you can look at it as a company team structure term. So the fact that Microsoft is, let's say, 45% in a single geographical location in Washington does not mean that it's not decentralized in terms of the team structure. And that aspect is actually still there. As a member of OneDrive, for example, I have no idea what's going on the Xbox team, for example, or to a great extent on the Office team. I do have some touch points there, but it's still decentralized. However, the fact that so many people are in the same geographical location gives Microsoft a lot of flexibility in terms of reorganizing those teams and strengthening connection between different teams or different products,
right,
without needing to change their life location, which is, of course, much more complex, and or without changing congressional districts that they operate in,
right,
which is another complexity.
Right.
So I definitely agree with you that not everyone needs to be in the same room to talk about everything, and that's not the case. However, there is the geographical location is a constraint that makes the structure much more rigid than maybe it should be, or maybe from how it allows for flexibility in future changes.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, I just thinking about that now, you know, Project Apollo was very decentralized in the sense that you had contractors all over the place building different segments. You know, in the Saturn V rocket, for example, was a really good example because you had three different companies working on different stages of that rocket, and yet they had enough communication where they knew when they put the stages together, everything would fit and it would fly. So, I mean, decentralization isn't a bad thing, and I think you know, the way NASA is set up right now is, yeah, it's a little bit of overhead. It's just you know, it's just I think it works better for innovation and stuff like that. I know we don't tag things like innovation with NASA nowadays, or at least some people don't, but I still do. But interesting conversation, and interesting parallels between with Microsoft. Discussion.
But Michael, Constellation was decentralized. I remember going to a conference in Houston. And I forget which NASA official spoke at that conference. This was the space whatever, the one they have, the World Space Congress. They have it every 10 years. And it was in Houston at the George Allen Center. And they said that their goal with Constellation was to have parts of it made and engineered and designed and represented in as many states, in as many congressional districts as possible, for decentralization and also to assure interaction with as many members of Congress as possible to keep it from being canceled, because they knew it was a long-term, long project that was going to be costly. And so they wanted it decentralized, and that was their goal. Of course, it didn't work.
Well, and maybe that's that's kind of the line that was crossed between the benefits of decentralization and doing it for the sake of decentralization as a goal versus as a means to an end.
Exactly. That's an excellent point.
Say that again, Amnon, or make the point again, please, because you weren't quite clear for everybody.
So what I'm saying is that with Constellation, it, again, from the outside, for me, it seems like it was a decentralization for the sake of decentralization as opposed to a means to an end to build a rocket and having companies in different places. So it was not a compromise or something that was used in order to expedite the project. It was done in order to kind of propagate itself, to have as many places as possible versus as many sources of innovation as possible, if you will.
So it was done for the wrong reason is basically what you're saying.
Right.
I think that's what he's saying, and that's an excellent point. But you know, we can also use Apollo for the other side. That, you know, decentralization for certain parts of Apollo didn't work. For example, the guidance system for the Apollo computer. When Kennedy issued his mandate, nobody was thinking about rockets. The first thing everybody was thinking about was the guidance system, and they didn't even think about competition. They just picked one person. They went straight to the Draper Labs, to Draper at MIT, and they gave them the contract and said, "Do it." That was one critical component that was centralized because there was no way they were the best people for the job, and trying to decentralize something as complex as that would have just been a disaster. You never would have made it. They almost didn't make it, but they were able to finally pull it off after, you know, NASA really, you know, maybe made sure they were doing what they needed to be doing. That's a long story, but I think centralization and decentralization can exist in both aspects of a project. I don't know if that sounds kind of screwy, but I'm having a hard time articulating what I'm thinking here.
Okay, anything else, guys? I'm long overdue for a break, so I'm willing to hold you over, Michael, but I got to take
a break. No, that's all I want to say. I might pop in and open lines. There's a few updates I want to talk about.
So. Okay, yeah, please do. Love to hear from you.
Okay, David. Have a good day.
Okay.
Thanks, Michael.
Sit tight, please. We're going to take our break, okay? We're about 15 minutes late on that, but I didn't want to interrupt the discussion with Michael. So everybody stay where you are, back in about 3 minutes.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of the Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And the Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality. And welcome back, everybody. Part two of our Friday Space Show program. We're talking with Amnon Gaudron, and we're looking at Microsoft and NASA in ways You probably never thought we'd look at them on the space show. And welcome back, Abnon. And you also have a part of your paper about either of these organizations, or both of them, becoming stale. You say, with all the glory, NASA and Microsoft are increasingly considered stale, irrelevant, heavy, and wasteful. So I hear it a lot about people who hate Microsoft and love Apple, for example, and they think Apple has a lock on innovation. And the new space cadets think that NASA is irrelevant. And one new space guy who is a frequent guest on the show, who you've probably heard, Bob Zimmerman, thinks that there shouldn't even be any government space programs. And others think that NASA should be done away with or transformed back to what it was with the old NACA before NASA was actually started. So, yeah, we hear this argument all the time on all sides of the spectrum for both companies. What have you to say about this? Are they stale?
So if you look at them, and there are several examples that embody that staleness and that heaviness. If you look at NASA, then your listeners are probably much more familiar than Microsoft examples. Shutting down Constellation cost billions of dollars, right?
Right. They even had billions of dollars in cancellation fees on the Ares rocket.
Yeah, so even canceling projects is not from today to tomorrow kind of thing, and okay, let's stop working on this and let's start working on that. On the Microsoft side, I think one of the more recent examples for this heaviness was Windows 8 to Windows 8.1, where when Windows 8 came out, one of the biggest cries of foul play was that the start button was taken away. So in Windows 8, the start screen was introduced, and the start button and start menu went away. Essentially, all of the functionality is there in different places, but there was a very clear request from customers to add back the start button. And guess what? It took a year to not add the start menu, but to add a start button that just leads to the existing start screen. So that's an example that I'm sure embodies the heaviness and not being able to even not innovate, go and make changes that are specific requests and very clear requests from users. Now in Windows 10, we all know it's been out in the open that the start menu is back, and it uses aspects of both the modern tiles and the Windows 7 start menu, but that's kind of beside the point. And the interesting piece about that is that unlike Windows 8.1, which took a year, and by the time it became public, there was really no way for customers to impact how the end version is going to look like. With Windows 10, there have already been two versions of it released with customer feedback incorporated into the second version. So it's from one aspect, it embodies the heaviness that Microsoft had or still has some aspects, but at the same time, the fact that Microsoft recognizes that and did do a self-retrospective and is changing the way it operates. So as, like I wrote in the article, a year ago when I just started thinking about that and writing about it, it seemed like Microsoft was this heavyweight company that really cannot change. But maybe it was the new CEO. Maybe it was just a better retrospective that the company did at the highest level. It does seem to be recognizing that aspect that was pretty much true up until a year ago.
Now, of course, with NASA, there isn't, I mean, people can write letters to their congressmen and stuff like that, but I really, I'm sour on all that process because I communicate to members of Congress all the time, and I'm lucky if I get back a letter that's even relevant to the one I sent in. But I think Microsoft is more willing to listen to people because they realize they're their customers that pay for their product, whereas the taxpayers don't have any kind of standing like that with Congress and NASA, so we're not usually listened to.
Yeah, the interesting aspect about NASA is that if you look at Microsoft, Microsoft had three CEOs from its inception. Right? There was Bill Gates for a long time, then there was Steve Ballmer, and now it's Satya Nadella. And if you look at NASA, it had many more administrators, right? Which uh-huh. is the, let's say, parallel to the CEO of a company. However, because of the environmental differences and being more bound to politics and to districts and to the government, they haven't been, the company structure is not really reflected by that. And if anything, as was said many times in the show, every new administration, which is bound to every new presidential administration, wants to make its mark and tends to hurt existing programs rather than reinvigorate them. So it's almost like maybe the other side of a double-edged sword, where the fact that there is a new administration and there is no continuity there on a scale that these projects take hurts these projects, whereas at Microsoft, maybe the fact that there was a new CEO and project scale is somewhat shorter, although if you look at kind of Windows, for example, Windows XP was 2001, Windows Vista was 2006, so it's not an order of magnitude shorter. But still, you have the continuity and yet new blood of leadership that can take the company forward.
You have another caller. Let's see who's on. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you, please?
Hi, David. Michael Listener calling again.
Okay, so Amnon, I asked Michael to call back in. There is a breaking news story that Michael can update us on, and then we'll go back to our discussion real quick. So what's the breaking news story, Michael?
First, apologies to your guests on breaking in, but Spaceship Two had a power test today using the new Nylon engine, and about 30 minutes ago, Virgin Galactic on its Twitter feed reported an in-flight anomaly. Who knows what that means? And they haven't said anything since, but some of the Twitter things I'm getting from some of my followers, including Ransomberg and Alan Stern, say that chutes have been seen. So we don't. There's still been no comment from Virgin, but when there's chutes, this can't be a good situation.
No, that's like an emergency system, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if the spacecraft is actually equipped with chutes itself, or if just the pilots have chutes.
I did check on Parabolic Arc with Doug Messier because he does really outstanding reporting on Virgin, and he doesn't have anything up yet other than the early morning test was scheduled.
Yeah, we've been following his Twitter account, but he's been radio silent too for the past half hour. So, this doesn't sound good, and if so, it's going to be a bad week for private space.
Well, there's a bumper sticker that says "Blank happens," right?
Yeah, this is true.
All right. So, anything else you want to ask our guest today? We'll go back if you hear anything else, because I'm paying attention to our show. So if you see a Twitter feed that says pilot ABC landed with a broken leg or something, call us back or email it to me and I'll read it on air. Either way, before we end the show,
I'll tell you what. I'll shoot some emails. I don't want to take up any more time for your guest.
You have anything more to say about?
He has a very interesting perspective.
Yeah, anything more about Microsoft or You know, by the way, SpaceX, we didn't talk about that, and I'm on your paper isn't about SpaceX, but for the most part, they're centralized with everything in Hawthorne, except they're decentralized for some of the functions, like engine testing in Texas, the Texas spaceport, and, of course, the launch platform in Florida. So I know you're not looking at SpaceX, but there's a company that has gone the opposite of decentralization for manufacturing their products.
Right. They are vertically integrated, and they're for the most part, co-located, and I'm sure that that adds to their ability to move fast. I will reserve what I just said with they're also new.
Yeah,
so
it
will be interesting to see them grow and be successful and get to a point in their life cycle where maybe they are structured differently or better for previous challenges and to future challenges. So that has not yet happened for SpaceX. So far, they are growing according to their current trajectory and challenges and goals.
Right. Michael, I'm going to go ahead and let you get off, okay?
All right. Thanks a lot, David.
Thank you. Sorry for that interruption, but the Spaceship Two news is breaking, so I thought we'd throw that out there for anybody listening.
Yeah, that's definitely not the news that all of us have been waiting for 10 years after the XPRIZE.
No, and as co-founder of Astronauts for Hire, you want to fly on one of these things, right?
Yeah, I definitely want to fly on these, and when we incorporated, we thought it was much closer than it is. And we keep getting reminded that spaceflight is difficult. And I can tell you that on another parallel from the software industry, software engineers especially tend to underestimate by a factor of two, sometimes an order of magnitude of different projects. And that leads to similarities of these gigantic projects that start and that are not fully baked when they're released or are never released. I have the same fault from my days as a software engineer. You think about it as your estimate, what it really is your most optimistic estimate because you really want this project to go on. And the parallel, you can look at Virgin Galactic, you can look at James Webb Telescope, for example, right, which is also over time and over budget. And you can look at the space shuttle, which was intended to be this reusable, cheap, a way to get to space and do everything with it as the ultimate space truck. And that didn't come to fruition for many reasons. So I think that the same kind of fault of being over-optimistic and estimating things to be smaller than they end up to be is on both sides, both on the space side and on the software side, and maybe on any engineering project.
Are you familiar with the musical group Journey?
Yes, I think so.
Given all the, as Michael said, it's a bad week for private space, but when the theme song for the San Francisco Giants, especially when they were losing all their games earlier in the season, was "Don't Stop Believin'" by Journey.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
and if I could get around the copyright laws for streaming music, I'd start playing "Don't Stop Believin'" as a theme song for the Space Cadets. But that doesn't have anything to do with our show today. But when Michael said that, I kind of thought about the Journey song that they used to play at all the Giants games and put the words up for sing along on the big board. Do you think that these, I'm going to use the word comparisons that we've been talking about, do you think they're going to hold into the future, or do you see NASA or Microsoft going off in a really different direction or doing something unique that changes all of this for the future?
So, like the conclusion that I drew in the write-up, that right now it looks like Microsoft is renewing and it is making big changes, some of them painful, and it's trying to structure itself for the future rather than being the company that was good for the past. I don't see that right now happening at NASA. It could be an organic or happen organically or naturally around NASA with so-called new space, and depending on successes not only of SpaceX, but hopefully of Orbital, who had a setback yesterday, and other companies, which could kind of lay the way for this to happen, because it will just really make no sense the way it's now. With Microsoft, there are big changes happening right now, but really the test will be whether it is able to disrupt markets like it was able to do so in the past, and not rely on its so-called cash cows of Windows and Office moving forward. So the kind of the real test of these big changes that are happening right now is whether they're going to yield results or just produce another version of this heavy company that can't disrupt markets that it's not the leader of. And that will become a reality or not in the next, I don't know, maybe 2 to 5 years. And we really don't know whether it's going to be successful right now.
Would NASA doesn't seem to feel competition beating down on its heels, but Microsoft sure does. How big a difference does... I know we're talking about a government agency versus a private commercial company. I mean, they're as different as night and day. But does the fact that NASA really is a government agency and there just simply is no competition for it, does that kind of keep it where it is?
So it's true that competition doesn't come to NASA in the same sense like it comes to Microsoft. However, you could look at the competition to NASA, other launch possibilities. You can look at competition to the space shuttle, the other rockets that put satellites in orbit, right, versus the original thought of the space shuttle that it was going to put all satellites in orbit, at least some orbit. Also, I think that internally at NASA, it should look at competition, even if it's not a customer market share or has the customer market share perspective to it. Competition in terms of cost, for example, is an aspect that should be looked at. If you look at Arianespace, for example, they are looking at their costs right now, because even though they're essentially a government entity, almost, they are looking at competition from other launchers, including SpaceX, and that's only going to grow. And NASA should be looking at that as well, because it all comes from the same pockets, right? If we want to launch something into space, or if we want to have a human mission of any kind, or even a non-human mission like Space Webb Telescope or any other Mars rover, there are costs that are involved, and using the same money in better ways, in smarter ways, could mean more validity to NASA, more projects being funded, more projects happening faster. So the competition there doesn't have to come explicitly from the customer base, but it can come in terms of cost and just other aspects of handling and managing the project.
By the way, I just got a tweet, and I can't, I, for all I know, I'm reporting a rumor, but what the hell, it is Halloween, so I'll take some luxuries here. So I've got a tweet that says that they're hearing that Spaceship Two disintegrated in midair waiting for updates, and so in that case, the parachutes would be the pilot. Whether or not any of this is true or not, Jeff Faust is tweeting, Kern County Fire Department headed to location north of Mojave, linked to SS2 anomaly. Now, Jeff Faust is 100% reliable in my book, and I would not doubt anything that Jeff Faust has to say. So I guess we'll get more details, and yeah, crappy week for commercial space, that's for sure.
Yeah, such a coincidence to.
And so then the question is: assuming everybody's okay and the vehicle disintegrated, do they have another vehicle, or are they, you know, what? I can't even begin to speculate.
Yeah, what does that mean in terms of a delay in the process in the program?
Well, if they don't have another vehicle, what the hell are they going to do if it disintegrated? But I'm getting lots of tweets now that are coming into me, and some say that there are no parachutes, and they're correcting that. And I haven't seen any tweets about the item, the thing being disintegrated, or the Kern County Fire Department heading out there. But I guess we'll just have to see how it, how it plays out.
Well, first, I hope that no one got hurt. And it would be extremely unfortunate if something as catastrophic as that.
Absolutely. So we simply hope for the best, and I guess we'll all find out. But again, I have total confidence in Jeff Faust, and so if he hears about the Kern County Fire Department, I'd give that a lot of credibility. But other than that, I don't know the other people tweeting, and I can't. I'm not going to read any more rumors. That's all. If Michael hears anything more while we're still on the air, I have great trust in Michael as well. But we wish for the best, right?
Oh,
unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, you know, Microsoft has had disasters, and I don't know, would Vista be a disaster? Is Windows 8 kind of a disaster? And, of course, NASA has had disasters, and when NASA has a disaster, it can often take lives. Microsoft doesn't have a disaster where it costs lives. It usually just costs money. And typically money for the corporation, not necessarily even for the customers, because the customers shun the product once it gets a bad rap. If you're looking at these two organizations, the side effects or the consequences of really bad decisions, one is money financially money for the most part, and the other can result in the loss of life.
Yes, that's a great observation. Microsoft has as big as problems it could have is not affecting human casualties. So when maybe the worst recent failure at Microsoft was the original Surface tablet. So Microsoft had to report, if I remember correctly, about almost $1 billion of inventory of the Surface of produced devices that weren't sold in the time frame that Microsoft thought they would be sold in. But, of course, $1 billion kind of saved in the light of a NASA failure, which leads to casualties, and more often than not, more than one. Now, those failures are fewer and far between, thankfully, for NASA. But that's a fair statement. Whatever the failure for Microsoft, the worst really that could happen, and it could still happen, is that Microsoft continues its course, which, at least right now, if it doesn't innovate, if it doesn't go into new markets, which it is working on doing, it could be it could fade to history. The fact that it's so big and successful right now does not mean that it will continue to do so and not shrink and not even close. If you look at Apple, for example, Apple nearly closed once or maybe even more than once. And now it's successful, and now it's definitely kind of many times used like the antithesis for Microsoft. But if you really look closely, Apple suffers from some similar aspects. And Apple will have to restructure itself and reinvent itself as well at some point, because the environment we're in now is going to be very different than 5 or 10 years from now. And just like Microsoft can't only rely on Windows and Office anymore, Apple can't rely on the iPhone and iPad anymore. Maybe not now, but it will be true several years from now. So the changing environment affects all kinds of companies, and the more successful you are looking back, the more prone you are really to being disrupted by other companies. And I don't know if you had the chance to read the book Innovator's Dilemma.
Yes, I have read it.
So it's an excellent book that kind of takes down the concept of disruption to a very simple market of hard drives, where you would think that the incumbent hard drive maker of today would be the incumbent, the one to make hard drives 5 years from now, but that's not necessarily the case, or at least wasn't the case in earlier days when hard drives went from, I think, 8 inches to 5 1/4 to 3 1/2, and each time that happened, the industry was completely disrupted by new players that created these smaller hard drives, even though the technology was very similar and the market leaders were just falling on their face because they listen to their existing customers, not realizing that new markets are being created. So that's going to be a reality that will continue to affect Microsoft. And NASA maybe has other challenges, but the end result of it is that now it is getting competition in the sense of other companies are launching things to space. And for the first time since the beginning of the space age, companies rather than governments launch things to the space station and into orbit and are talking about missions to Mars and are talking about missions to the moon. And all this will unfold in the next few years, or hopefully a few years. maybe 10 or 20 years or beyond our lifetime. But that kind of competition that NASA is facing, which I think will eventually lead to NASA changing its premise or what it does or the types of projects it tackles, that's going to be a decision point for people far more qualified than I am at this point.
Here's your last question. Jeremy is in Oklahoma City. He says, we know that every presidential office or administration that comes into power, and we're due for the next one in a couple of years, puts in a new NASA administrator whose purpose is to serve the president and whatever the president's agenda on space is. Are you at all thinking that NASA might change radically depending on who the president is and who the administrator might be, and what direction would the change be? It's possible NASA could go back to more of a status quo kind of organization, or it's possible it could try to be reorganized as a trim and firm competitive organization, embracing commercial space options to partner with them, something that right now NASA maybe toys with but has not really gone down the road fully to adopt.
Yeah, I would agree that right now partnering with new space or commercial space is kind of like Apple TV for Apple. It's more or less a hobby. It's not a big portion or a primary aspect of what NASA is doing. I think that either NASA or the new administration will go after and make NASA innovative in the sense of the maybe the way it works or or its structure, or that would become a reality because of external constraints to NASA. Because if you look at NASA right now, in the Apollo days, the cameras that went to the moon were the most innovative, very expensive, kind of cutting edge of the time, whereas today, the camera that is on Curiosity is, if I remember correctly, a 2-megapixel camera that withstands the conditions over there, which is different than any other camera. But it can't, the perception, at least, of that is that it's not cutting edge anymore. And the things that NASA does are cutting edge, for example, the landing mechanism for Curiosity, are fewer and far between compared to the old days. And that aspect of it, I think, will either change with an administration, which is hard for me to think that radical changes will happen just because of the way these changes happened in the last few administrations that have been here and keeping track. And I think that it will more happen organically because around NASA, the environment will change so much that it will not only be kind of heavyweight or contentious to continue the way it is right now, but it will be completely nonsensical.
If you looked at this again in 5 years, what do you think you'd see?
Well, I'll see first whether Microsoft succeeded in the big changes that it's doing internally right now, and whether it succeeds, for example, in the smartwatch market, right, which it tried and failed before, and just yesterday it launched the Microsoft Band, which is getting so far good responses, right, as an example. And maybe other markets, maybe it will do better in the phone market. I don't know. On the NASA side, it will be interesting to see whether the next administration would make big changes to NASA, or if things will continue as usual. And as usual means that we'll see Curiosity's swing progressing. We'll see, hopefully, James Webb telescope being launched, and really no restructuring and no radical changes in the inner workings of NASA. And maybe 5 years is too short of a time frame for a government agency like NASA. I don't know. It definitely is a huge, almost a generation for a software company or for a technology company like Microsoft.
You going to do an updated article down the road?
I don't know. We'll see where I am in 5 years. Who knows? I definitely want to keep tabs on this topic, both from my personal perspective of I'm at Microsoft, and maybe in 5 years I will be or won't be at Microsoft, and it will be definitely a rewarding place, a more rewarding place to work in, if I know that Microsoft does more of the right stuff and less of the stuff that draws criticism.
Okay, well, listen, I think it's a really interesting article, and I, if you have updates, let us know, and we'll bring you back, and we'll talk more about the updates, and you can tell us how the trends are breaking, okay?
Okay, I will. Thank you very much, David.
Yeah, and listeners, real quick, just for the latest updates, although you'll get it after, I mean, it'll be old news by the time I archive the show. So Spaceship Two is destroyed. One pilot for sure has been found and okay, and there are lots of conflicting reports on the second crew member that possibly has moderate injuries to possibly has been killed. So it is unsure about the second crew member. The scanner reports are asking what kind of chemicals and what hazards might be in the area because of the explosion. People are listening to police scanners in the area and fire scanners. That's where that's coming from. And the other thing is there's some preliminary information that one of the fuel tanks ruptured, and that may be the cause of what happened, but that's totally unconfirmed. But it does look like it's pretty certain that there is at least one crew member that they do have. So, but the ship is gone from all the reports that are coming in. So, Abnon, you're going to have to find another vehicle for astronauts for hire.
Well, who knows? Maybe X-Corps will take the lead here.
Yeah, I'll bet this will make them slow down and take a real good hard look at their engineering and what they're doing, because this is really huge if these reports are correct and Spaceship Two is destroyed and we've lost a crew member, and God hopeless that that's a phony report. But I guess we'll all find out as the day goes on. But what can we say? It's heartbreaking to all of us.
It's heartbreaking to finish the show with such a somber piece of news. But yes, we have to remember that space flight is really, really hard.
No matter who stands
on top of the company or no matter what we would like it to look like.
Now, remember the law that they passed, which was renewed, that there's virtually no regulation unless there is a major accident, a major injury or death, or third-party damage or injuries. If that happens, the door opens for Congress to stop the industry and to regulate. Those are the keys that regulate the industry. So as long as there was no such accident, Congress and the FAA stay out of it. But as soon as that event happens, that law calls for regulation. And so unlike the scaled accident, you know, several years ago out in Mojave from the nitrous oxide accident, which was deemed an industrial accident, so it did not trigger the regulation. It was a California OSHA investigation, and that was an industrial accident. This is an in-flight accident that the FAA will be all over, and we may see the days of regulation end even before the industry gets on its feet.
Yeah, we may. This may change the playing field for everyone.
Everything. Yeah, when you guys at Astronauts for Hire figure out if there's an impact to your organization from all of this or what's happening, let me know and let's do a space show and update Astronauts for Hire, okay?
All right.
So keep that in mind for down the road, all right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Take care and happy Halloween to you and all the listeners. And I appreciate this. As soon as I get it up and archived, I will send you the links to where all the information is. And really interesting work that you did, and I hope you do stay on top of it and keep it current and keep us posted, and I look forward to talking to you more about it down the road.
All right. Yeah, thanks very much for the time, David, and I hope it was interesting to people from Microsoft to hear about Parallels to NASA and vice versa as well.
Right. And listeners, open lines on Sunday. Lots to talk about, obviously. And thanks again to Amnon for a great, great piece of analysis that I would have never, ever thought of doing. So thanks for opening the door on this. And we'll look forward to hearing from all of you on Sunday and then next week on regular space show programs. Everybody, goodbye. Don't forget, daylight savings time changes this Sunday, 2 a.m. Goodbye from the space show and our guest, Amnon.